to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for sticking around on this Thursday morning. Text line, once again, you want to be in touch with the program, all you got to do, text 251-343-0106. We're always appreciative of the feedback. But joining us now on the line, he is the current congressman for the 2nd Congressional District and the Republican nominee in the 1st Congressional District on the ballot on November 5th. Start to see some, but Barry Moore, start to see some of his signs pop up around town. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Jeff, we are doing good. Good morning to you, my friend.
Hey, thanks for coming on. We do appreciate it. We'll talk about the election cycle. Like I said, I started to see some signs, at least for your campaign here. You know, I guess not taking it for granted. You are on the ballot on November 5th, even though it is, you know, it's a pretty heavily Republican district right now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a good district for the Republican Party, and I think for our conservative values and the way we voted as we've been in Congress. So, but yeah, we don't take it for granted. You never take it for granted. I don't like to leave my signs out a long period of time. I always take them down and then put them back up. So we're starting to put them back out. Just remind people that, hey, we're on the ballot along with President Trump, and we need to get everybody out to support our party to try and to turn the ship, if you will, Jeff, and get things back in order in D.C. and in the country overall.
Well, that's good to hear. Otherwise, how you feeling about this election? I feel as a Republican, I mean, there's no excuses made here for being that. But it just seems like things are definitely going the GOP's way. I don't know that you're quite there to say it's a no brainer, it's a lock, but you certainly got to be kind of pleased with some of the progress.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and you can't believe the polls that you see on the mainstream media. We've learned, certainly in the last 4 years, you can't trust the media. I think we all suspected that. But after Trump won and the way they went after him, who he used to be kind of, you know, the darling of the media, that have him on shows. And I think it showed a definite bias. And since then, I think that the polling a lot of times has not been always accurate. And, you know, I ask a lot of Republicans as I'm around the district, have you been polled? Most of them haven't been polled. But when you look at the internal polls, I get updates from Trump's camp. Natalie on his team sends them to me, the internal poll. And they're really pleased with what they're seeing. The momentum is certainly shifting our way. And I think it's just, it was inevitable in a sense that people just, you know, Jeff, you and I talk about it being a 2G election, gas and groceries. And it's even bigger than that. Now, I think this election, it's certainly, and we say this, but no matter how old you are right now, this is the most important election in your lifetime because the nation is going in the wrong direction. We really don't have a border. We have inflation out of control. We have weaponization of government. We're looking at World War III, where you got Russia invading Ukraine. Taiwan's now doing missions and training and exercises. China's doing exercises outside of Taiwan. And obviously, Iran has recently attacked Israel. So I think people have to know there's an anxiety about the direction this country is going, and it is going to reflect in the polls in November. I think that the people see that we have to change directions. And that's why I say it's such an important election for me and you, but for our kids and our grandkids. If we want America to be what America can be, we have to change directions.
Well, what do you make of this? We're starting to see a lot of Kamala Harris out there doing interviews and things. And I don't know what to make of it. And I'm asking you to kind of play pundit here, but it does feel like that they are desperate's the word, or at least trying to go take a look downfield and complete some passes. I mean, don't you think that's kind of a sign of at least where they think the race is, that they need to do these things?
Yeah, I think with Joe Biden, they could hide him in the basement and not put him out there with COVID. And that was their excuse. And then when they pulled Joe from the top of the ticket and stuck Kamala up there without anybody voting for her, they thought that they could hide her and not put her out there and not have her do any debates, not have her do anything. And the $1 billion she has in the bank would be enough, but people are not buying what they're selling. So now they're literally trying to get her out and be the salesperson, but it's obvious she doesn't know the economy. She doesn't know. She just says day one she's going to fix things. And I think Brett Baer did a good job. I call her out and said, well, you've been there 3.5 years, you know, and your party's been in control for 12 of the last 16, and the country is in horrible shape. So there's I think by default they had to do something, but what they're doing is not working.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I suspect that there's more of this coming, but I don't know. It just, to me, it reeks of desperation. I'm joined by Congressman Barry Moore here on the program. Congressman, the down ballot stuff. Now, your chamber, obviously, I ask you this from time to time, and when you're on, it looks okay. I guess the House just really depends on what Donald Trump does and how he performs, because he'll have coattails, and that's sort of the way the House goes a lot of times. What about the Freedom Caucus? How are things looking? Bob Good losing his primary? What do you make of where the Freedom Caucus is right now?
Yeah, I think if you look at the Freedom Caucus, Jeff, there's no doubt that I think, and I said it in the debate, that if the nation is in fact saved, it'll be the men and women in that room that do it, because there is a system in D.C. that does not work for the American people. And I think the House Freedom Caucus, those guys, from what my experience has been, they vote their convictions, they vote what's right. They are truly trying to protect liberty. However, if a House Freedom Caucus member sometimes gets crossed with President Trump, then there's a divide within the party, and in primaries that plays out. I think that's what happened with Bob Good. I think that when you come out against Trump, when that is the new direction the party is going, and whether, look, Trump may have spent a little more money than some of these guys were happy with, but he also gives some incredible tax cuts that I think generated revenue for the nation. And the revenues actually went up on Trump's watch up until COVID. They tried to blame him, you know, and say, well, he had the worst economy. But that was just that last year we had to shut things down, or he chose to allow Fauci and those guys to advise him. And I think that was bad advice. But if you look at the members that got crossed with Donald Trump, those are the folks that are struggling in the primary, because Trump is the Republican Party. Whether you want to admit it or not, a lot of, when you have the Robert Kennedys of the world saying, hey, look, the World Health Organization, you know, it's big pharma, it's big whatever, those people have been controlling the country. When you have the Robert Kennedys of the world coming to join Trump, and the Tulsi Gabbard, who was former vice chair of the DNC, and Elon Musk, who said he stood in line 6 hours to meet Barack Obama years ago, when they're all on Trump's team, that tells you that Trump, he's doing something different in the country, and it's bringing people within the tent that want less government, that want more liberty. And I think it plays out in those primaries when you have a Bob Good who is against Donald Trump and then tries to run to him at the last minute. I think most of the House Freedom Caucus guys are fine, because most of us, we don't agree with Trump 100% of the time, but heck, my wife don't agree with me 100% of the time. But in fact, I think Trump trusts the House Freedom Caucus for the most part. I mean, Mick Mulvaney, Mark Meadows, his last two chief of staff came from that very organization. And so he trusts us, but if those members within there get cross with him, then it plays out in a primary and voters choose to go sometimes with Trump.
What about this? I know this might seem like we're putting the cart before the horse, but Trump wins. Republicans somehow hold on to the House. I think they'll get the Senate. How does the Trump administration, how do Republicans, pro-Trump Republicans on Capitol Hill, keep it from being a repeat of the of 2017, when it seemed like, in some ways, the Mitch McConnell-led Senate was working against Trump, the Paul Ryan-led House was working against him? Like, how do you get Congress sort of in gear, in line, and try to accomplish what they can while they have the power?
The most effective thing that we can do day one, and when I say day one, I mean day one, is give Trump a list of regulations that we don't vote on, that the Biden administration has put in place, reinforce the laws on the borders. It don't have to come through all 435 members of the House. And obviously, if the Democrats control the House, which I think is going to be very close, I mean, my seat was redrawn for a Democrat to win. There was one in Louisiana redrawn for a Democrat to win, the old two that I was in. And so it's going to be tight. But I think, Jeff, with the stroke of a pen, literally, and a phone, as Barack Obama said, I think Donald Trump could go in day one and deregulate these agencies that have become the law of the land without being voted on by the American people. There are things that the executive branch can do. We saw this with the border. We saw this with the Keystone Pipeline. We saw some things that Biden did day one, just in spite of Trump, that have hurt the nation, have hurt the economy. So Trump don't need the House necessarily. We certainly want him to have the House. And listen, there are rhinos in the Senate. There are rhinos, and when I say rhinos, Republican in name only, that don't believe in smaller government, that don't believe truly in liberty and freedom that is protected by the Constitution. But Trump has a pen, and he has a phone, and we're helping him put a list together of regulations that if he will do away with those regulations, we can jumpstart the economy immediately. But however, Jeff, let me say this. It is not going to be an easy time for our nation. If Trump wins, I was there day one when Trump was sworn in January of 2017, and the city of Washington, D.C. was on fire because the left in this country could not fathom the idea that we picked somebody outside of the system that was truly there to repair it. Trump also has to make key decisions in who he puts in his advisory roles, who puts in the leadership. I think he made the mistake of trusting the system, of trusting the bureaucrats. Those bureaucrats are, in fact, the problem. They are the cancer that needs to be cut out of this country to limit government and put the power back to the people by the elected officials rather than bureaucrats making law. But Trump can, in fact, deregulate, and then we can cut some of these agencies, and he needs to surround himself with people that he, in fact, trusts.
Well, what about, you know, and deregulation's important, but the thing that just you can't get out of your mind, if, at least for me, it is the deep state, the administrative state. Donald Trump can't have a attorney general or bureaucrats in the DOJ who are working against him like he did in his first term. He can't have, you know, the intelligence agencies working against him like he did in the first term. Well, what needs to happen to clean that up? Because this may be the last chance to take care of that.
Yeah, I think he has to realize, I would love to see him go in and cut the upper levels of all these bureaucracies. Get rid of these folks. We don't need the Department of Education necessarily. There's so many agencies that have grown well beyond their power. I remember flying on planes to Washington, D.C. during COVID, and they said federal law requires you wear a mask. And I thought, I didn't vote on that. So he has to surround himself with people who are like-minded in a sense that we truly have to. We don't have a lot of time here. Day one, like I said, we have to make sure that he surrounds himself. And I think you realize that, you know, coming from the private sector, Jeff, he, like many elected officials, they went to D.C. and they trusted the advisors. You got to trust your gut on these issues, and you got to put people around you that are not there because they've been there 30 years and they're going to outlast you. They know you're going to be there 4 years. We got to clean that out, and it's going to be tough. It's not going to be an easy thing, but if we want to get the federal government back answering to the American people, there's going to have to be some tough cuts made. There's going to have to be some choices in leadership that are made that, in fact, really do love liberty, like Elon Musk loves freedom of speech. Vivek Ramaswamy understands the economy. Robert F. Kennedy understands the CDC and the big pharma. You got to put people around it that are outside that system now, but are willing to come in and help. And I think that's going to be key. You know, like I know, the swamp itself circles the wagons. They did that on Trump the first time around. And so I think he's learned that just because you come in the private sector and you used to be the boss in the private sector, you get to say, hey, go make this happen. If it doesn't get done, then there's very little you can do. He has to go in day one and put people in that will take care of the issues. And I think it's a matter of picking the right people. I think he learned a lesson from 2016 when he got elected. And I think I don't think he'll make the same mistakes. He's a smart man.
I mean, it seems to me like he's got to be like this, like, hey, this is a cutthroat town. You're not going to win these people over. You got to, if like for a better term, you just got to steamroll them while you can. Otherwise, they'll come back. I mean, and I don't think that they'll be able to do what they did in 2017 with a Mueller report or any of that. But talk about that. Like, isn't that going to be something I think you got to be worried about right now, assuming he wins? Like I said, we're putting the cart before the horse, but what will establishment D.C. try to do to derail his presidency?
Yeah, and I think that, again, it does fall in the House in the sense that we need to defund some of the stuff. It frustrates me to see us to continue to vote for CRs that just continue funding these agencies, reauthorizing FISA where the FBI can spy on citizens, things like that that have been done that need to be fixed, that we have to fix, that do, in fact, fall in our purview. But we need to work hand in hand with the president. And like you said, he's got to go in there and make some tough choices. And again, I want to say this again, Jeff, it's not going to be easy. This first 6 months for Trump, we're kind of like the children of Israel, my friend. They got out there and they were whining and moaning and they were ready to go back and be slaves. We as the American people got to look forward and say, we got to restore liberty in this country. And it's going to be a tough road to hoe. There's going to be some tough decisions to be made. And I think that the American people have started sending people to D.C. in a sense that understand that, the people have woke up, if you will. And I think even if you see it in the minority voters, the people whose cities are no longer safe, they're tired of talk. They want action. And I think Trump, because it is his last 4 years, he has an opportunity to do some things. He don't have to worry about getting reelected. And if he, in fact, is willing to put his life on the line, which he has, to do this job and his own wealth and his own freedom, in a sense that he's been targeted by every agency. They've tried to lock him up. They've caused him to spend millions of dollars on legal fees. And obviously, they've tried to somebody's trying to kill the man. So he knows he's got 4 years. If he's willing to put it all on the line, I think that there's no holding him back. I think he's going to go in and lead. It's going to be unlike what we've seen in the past, because the people are fed up. And I'm, for one, am fed up with what the government's doing to the American people. They're not working for us anymore. They're working for foreign countries and people who are not even citizens.
Last question, wrapping up on this, kind of getting back to what's going on right now. And I've talked to some of your colleagues the last couple of weeks, the hurricane response, FEMA response. And I think a lot of people say this, look at how much money we're sending to Ukraine. Look at how much money we're sending to even Lebanon and humanitarian aid, but we're not getting much humanitarian aid to the mountains of Western North Carolina and other places. I mean, what's Congress? Does it have a role here to say, hey, we need to figure out why this isn't working like it's supposed to with FEMA?
Absolutely. Well, it's Americans last. I mean, we send money to Ukraine, $176 billion. That's more. We only spent $52 billion on every road and bridge project in the United States of America in 2022, $52 billion. We sent three times that to another country. And then when you get this FEMA response, where we know that DHS moved money to help people coming here illegally crossing the border, the 9 million plus the 1.8 million guyways, they got all this money. And then we got people in North Carolina that are suffering. And a friend of mine, Dan Bishop, who happens to be on House Freedom Caucus, he wants an autopsy on every single person that died in North Carolina. That's his area. Because he's like, I believe that some of these people, because of the failure of the response to FEMA, died from elements and other things, not from the storm itself. And there has to be accountability. And we have to look at ourselves when we're funding these agencies and say, if you're not doing it right, we're going to do some things different from a congressional standpoint for some accountability. And so, yeah, it's been, I think that we saw where the people, the toxic males, if you will, were out there with chainsaws and on equipment. We saw Samaritan's Purse, Franklin Graham. We see that those groups being far more effective with much less resources than our own federal government. So why in the world do we keep funding FEMA when they fail to actually manage the mission of emergency management in America? Instead, it's all about foreign illegals coming here across the border and foreign countries. We have to prioritize, Jeff. It's like I say, if you're on an airplane and they always tell you, if the mask drop from the ceiling, you put yours on first and then you take care of the young kids with you. If America's not healthy, the world is not healthy. If America's not strong, the world is not safe. We have to get priorities back where they belong, and that's to the American people who are paying the bills for everybody anyway.
Congressman, we'll have to leave it there, but always insightful discussion, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Hey, thanks, Judge. Y'all have a great weekend.
Congressman Barry Moore, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.